Okay, so today, this is our last lecture from my part of the course, and I want to start by talking a little bit about the most important distribution in traditional statistics, and then about some recent trends. And at the end, if there's time, I want to go back to the COVID model that I talked about before, and some other topics that I thought were interesting as I was preparing the course, but are somewhat peripheral. And then finally, we'll conclude with, once again, a talk about modeling. So the normal distribution on page 2, here we see the normal distribution itself, which is the light yellow line labeled phi of z, the circle with a slanted slash through it, indicates the probability density function of the standard normal distribution. You can see that it has a mean of 0. You know that the mean is 0 because it's pretty clearly symmetrical. It's the same shape above 0 as below. The peak is at 0, so that's where most of the weight is. And you can also tell that most of the area under this curve, part of which is shaded green, is between minus 1 and plus 1. In fact, about 2/3 of the area is in that, and about 1/6 is in the area above plus 1, and 1/6 in the area below minus 1. The so phi of z applies to the whole curve, the whole yellow curve. And that is the density, as I mentioned, which isn't really a probability. It's how much probability you are adding as you move to the right on the curve. The letter z is conventionally used for the standard normal distribution and for random variables and values of the standard normal distribution. The small z is used for the values, and an uppercase Z is used for a standard normal random variable. Now, the shaded area shows you the cumulative distribution. This is the integral, the area under the curve, up to the value y, which, if you look at the caption on the left, you can see that that's 0.5, and that's about what it looks like. The graph is not 100% accurate, and in fact, if you look very carefully, you'll see that it's a little bit, the green part goes up to, but doesn't quite make it to 0.5. That's an artifact of the graph, of the graphing software. So the graph at the right shows us the amount of, or the probability of the event that our random variable x, which is a standard normal random variable, is less than 0.5. And that's given by the area under the curve, which is labeled capital phi of y. So now let's go to the next graph. We can see the complement. So the complement of the event x is less than or equal to y, 0.5, or y, is given by all of the values greater than 0.5. Because the probability at exactly at a point is actually equal to 0, the amount in the green shaded area above 0.5 is equal to 1 minus phi of y. And so this is how we interpret these normal curves most of the time. So here we have a normal curve with a standard deviation of 1 and a mean of 0. That's what we mean by standard normal random variable. When we talk about a standardized variable, we mean one that has been has had its average subtracted, so that the average of the new random variable is equal to 0, and all of those differences are divided by the standard deviation of the original random variable, so that the standard deviation of the new random variable is exactly equal to 1. So a standardized random variable is one with mean 0 and standard deviation 1, and a standard normal random variable is one with mean 0 and standard deviation 1. Now, if we want to take the union of different events, for example, we can take the union or the disjunction of the event x is less than or equal to 0 or x is greater than 0.5. The probability of the event x is less than 0 is the area of the curve to the right of 0, and you can see that that's pretty big, and in fact that's exactly equal to 1/2, because the normal random variable is the normal distribution is symmetric, and so if you go to the highest point, that's going to be exactly half of the area under the curve. And then we have the same amount that we had before, 1 minus phi of y. And the total area on the left and right sides here is going to be the probability of our union event, one or the other. That is, x is less than or equal to 0, or x is greater than or equal to, is greater than 0.5. Usually, we don't have an asymmetric event like this, but we often do consider the event that x is, say, less than or equal to minus 1 and greater than or equal to 1. So that's a symmetric union. The point is that if we have a hypothesis that the mean is equal to 0, then we're interested in the case of the mean is not equal to 0, and in that case it could go high or it could go low. Sometimes we have a strong belief that it's either higher than the hypothesis or it's equal to the hypothesis, and then we use a one-sided case. But here we have the two-sided case. Finally, we are often interested in the interval between these two, and that is given by the formula phi of y minus phi of x, where y is the upper boundary of our interval and x is the lower boundary of our interval. To work with these as formulas, I have added these two slides, or three slides, I guess, pointing out once again that the density is not a probability, but rather the derivative or the slope of the cumulative distribution function. Since the cumulative distribution function is always increasing, we always add more probability as we get bigger and bigger events, the density is going to be positive. The interesting events to us are always built up of intervals. They may be very complicated in some cases, but they are always built up out of intervals going from some lower boundary to the upper boundary. We can take intersections, we can take unions of these, and that will define the way we compute our events. In general, we use the uppercase F for this compute. cumulative distribution function, and the probability that x is between the lower bound and the upper bound is equal to f of the upper bound x bar minus f of x lower bar. The special case of a normal random variable, we typically use phi instead of f, phi being the letter in the Greek alphabet that corresponds to f. Since the cumulative distribution function is defined as the probability of the half line to the left of x, that is, x such that minus infinity is less than x is less than or equal to our specific value x. If we want to look at something, if we want to look at the complement, if we want to say that did not happen, we simply subtract the probability from 1. If we have two events that are not, do not intersect, that the null event is the intersection, so that they can't both happen, then we can just add the probabilities in the same way. And if you look carefully, you will see that the examples and cases here correspond exactly to the graphs that we provided for the normal distribution. The cumulative distribution of a normal random variable is an S-curve that we've seen before, the logistic curve. It's very similar to the logistic curve, slightly different. Now, the most important aspect of the normal random variable is the so-called central limit theorem. You know about the law of large numbers in general, I think, which states that the average of a large number of independent trials typically approaches the average of a probability distribution. However, we want to know exactly what we mean by that, and we'd also like to compute certain probabilities about it. Of course, for example, we could throw a coin 100 times, and even if it's a fair coin, so that the probability of one side coming up is 1/2 and the other side also is 1/2, it's still possible that the coin would come up heads 100 times in a row. And we'd like to be able to compute the probability of that happening. We can use the central limit theorem to do that by looking at the normal random variable that is related to this. So the central limit theorem says that the average or the sum of a number of independent random variables is going to eventually converge to a normal random variable. The individual random variables do not have to be normal random variables. They don't even have to be continuous, but the distribution is eventually going to converge to a normal distribution. In general, if we need to compute probabilities based on some average and standard deviation, if we have enough data, typically 100 observations or so gets us pretty close, all calculations can be done with sufficient accuracy using approximate normal distributions based on the mean and the standard deviation instead of exact distributions. And this was extremely important before we had computers, because we could pre-calculate these and look up the answers in tables. If you have a statistics textbook, there will be such tables in the back. Now, of course, we let the computer do it on the fly, and these methods are very convenient and easier to interpret, perhaps, than some of the traditional ones. So now I want to show you exactly how the central limit theorem works. First, we're going to look at sums of up to n independent and identically distributed binary random variables. That is, they take the value 0 or 1. And we'll start with the case where the probability of 0 is equal to the probability 1 of 1, which is equal to 0.5. And all other values, half, 2, pi, minus 17, all these other values have a mass or density of 0. All of the mass is at these two cases, 0 and 1, for a total probability of 1 for the event either 0 or 1 has happened. The sum of identical binary random variables is sufficiently important to have a name of its own. It's called the binomial distribution for n and p. P is the probability of 0, and n is the number of identically distributed independent random variables that we add up. In each of the following graphs, the red curve, which is a normal density function, describes a continuous distribution, but the blue one is discrete. It's the binomial mass function, and it takes on integer values from 0 to n. The curve is an artistic rendition of the probability mass function, because of course fractional values actually have mass 0, but it's convenient for the eye to not just draw the points, but draw lines between them so that you can follow and see what the shape of things are. So let's take a look at the first case where n is equal to 1. Then, as you can see, the probability of 0 and the probability of 1 are equal. They're both 0.5. We connect between those two. And the average, the mean of that distribution, of course, is 0.5. Half of 0 is 0, half of 1 is 1/2. So you add those two together, and that gives us 0.5 for the average. Interestingly enough, the normal random variable with the same standard deviation and the same mean is the red line, and it just about the right width at a height of 0.5, but not quite. So that's just sort of a random mathematical fact that they look very similar at that level. But in fact, the height of this curve at 0 is a little bit less than 0.5. The height of the curve for z equal 1 is a little bit less than 0.5. So now let's look at the case 2. In the case of 2, there are four possibilities. We can get 0 and 0, we can get 0 and 1, we can get 1 and 0, or we can get 1 and 1. When we add them up, we either get 0, 1, or 2. But there's only one way out of 4 to get 0, only one way out of 4 to get 2, and two ways out of 4 to get a sum of 1. So the probability of 0 as the sum is 0.25. The probability of 2 is 0.25. And the probability of 1 is 0.5, twice that. If we take the correct standard deviation and the average of 1 and use that for a normal random variable, we get the red curve. And as you can see, if we look at the previous slide, number 11, there's quite a bit of difference at the top and especially at the tails of the normal random variable from the binomial random variable. Things are getting a little bit closer here. Of course, as we get out to 2.5, there's no mass at all for the blue, and there's still substantial mass out in that area for the normal random variable. So these really are quite different from each other. So now let's look at the case 4. For 4 random variables, there are five different possibilities, sums from 0 to 4. And to get 0, of course, we have to have all 4 of them come up 0. The probability of that is quite low, 0.625. To get 4, they all have to come up 1. And that, again, has a very low probability of 0.0625. The probability for 1 and 3 is quite a bit higher. It's 0.25. And the probability of 2 is highest of all. Doesn't quite make it to 1/2 as before, but it does get to about 0.375, if I remember correctly. And as you can see, we're getting closer to the red curve. If we continue with n equals 8, you can see there's almost no mass left above 8 or below 0 in the normal random variable. And the curves are starting to look quite similar. At n equals 16, the tails are almost identical. At n equal 32, the only place you can really tell the difference is at the very peak, where the blue triangle is still a little bit below the red curve. At 64, you can barely see the difference, and it's starting to look purple along the rest of the curve. And for the case of 128, you really can't tell the difference. Now, you might think that the symmetry has something to do with this, but in fact, that's not true. Now we want to look at an asymmetric distribution. The next several slides display the sum of n independent and identically distributed binary random variables, but this time they're asymmetric. We still use the binomial distribution to describe this. It's an asymmetric binomial distribution. And the probability mass function here, we give the probability of 0, 0.8, and the probability of 1, 0.2, and that leaves a probability of 0 for all other values. Despite the asymmetry in the underlying distribution, we still are going to converge to a normal distribution. Once again, remember that the red curve, the normal density function, describes a continuous distribution with values at every point. The blue one, the binomial mass function, is discrete. It only takes on integer values from 0 to n, and the curve is just connecting the dots at the integer values. So the normal curve is the same as before. Our average is the same, and our standard deviation is a little bit different. So no, I'm sorry, the average is different. The average is much smaller. It's 0.2. And the standard deviation also is a little bit different. So you see that at 0, the probability in the binomial distribution is 0.8. The probability for the normal distribution, or the density for the normal distribution, is about 0.9. And for the value at 1, we see that the mass of probability at 1 for the binomial distribution is equal to 0.2, and it's about 0.15 for the normal distribution. And again, we go through the same process now on page 21. It happens that for this particular value, instead of getting a peak like we did before, we get a straight line again. That's just an accident of choosing these particular things, and I didn't know that was going to happen. I was rather surprised. I thought I had made a mistake. But it turns out to be the right result. So now we look at 4, and as you can see, the left side is really quite different from the normal distribution, but the right side is starting to approximate it fairly well, although unlike the case of the symmetric distributions, we actually see that the probability mass for extreme values is higher for the binomial distribution than it is for the normal distribution. It looks like the binomial distribution has a probability of 0 for 4, but in fact it's somewhat bigger than that. It's 0.2 to the fourth power, which is going to be about 4 zeros and a 1/6, something like that, or 3 zeros and a 1/6. In any case, it's about 1 in 1,000, and so it's less than a pixel wide. That's why it looks like 0. And if we go on to 8, now we're starting to look like the normal curve on the left-hand side, although again it goes over the normal curve. And on 16, then 32, 64, and because the distortion of asymmetry actually matters here, we have to go to 128, and you can still see that there's a slight separation. If you went to 256, then you would have the same thing as before, where the curve basically becomes purple because the normal and the binomial curves are exactly the same.